Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 3rd, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast anywhere you could possibly find a PokerCast. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, I think that poker casting is probably the best time of the week for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it always is for me, but every once in a while, I know you're like, oh, let's go. The show's getting to 90 minutes again. We got to trim it back a little bit.
Well,
hey, the streak's got to end at some time. Why can't it end this week?
But those are all still true. Doesn't mean I don't enjoy it. Those are all still true facts. So, I mean, things that need to happen, happen. I mean, I think that people start to wane off and lose interest after an hour. I think it's a nice round number. I think it saves us time in the long run. So I'm not saying that stuff isn't true, but, you know, hanging out with you, talking about poker and some other stuff, laughing, and it's a good time.
It is a good time.
And it's like, you know, what I love is when people email or write us and call us or whatever, and they're like, you know what I like about your show? It's like we're sitting around at the home game chatting and stuff. And I'm like, that's what it's like. Because we don't play poker as much as we used to either. So that's why I enjoy the show. Because it's kind of like the get-together when we have our home games, you know?
Yeah. Which we don't have often enough.
I know. I don't know what the deal is. I'm starting to lose interest, man.
I know what the deal is that I'm never home.
I know. What the hell? Stop traveling and make our business successful. It's terrible of you.
Well, I'll tell you, the next time in Nevada, you know where I'm going.
Yes, I do now.
7-Eleven or Family Dollar stores, because that's where I can fund my online account now. I don't know if you saw this, but Real Gaming, which is the online poker site for South Point Hotel and Casino, which actually, a little known fact, was the first licensed online site in Nevada. obviously eclipsed by WSOP.com and Ultimate since then, but they now are allowing players to fund their accounts at 7-Eleven or Family Dollar stores using the Pay Near Me network. So essentially, you got to go on and download or print out a barcode, I guess, and you take it into the 7-Eleven, and the little 7-Eleven guy zaps it, give him the money, boom, money's in your account.
I think that's really cool.
Phone if you want.
I think that's really cool, and you know me, Mr. Positive. I just wonder, it's so arbitrary, 7-Eleven and Family Dollar. I mean, it's such an arbitrary thing. You wonder, like, you can just imagine that conversation approaching, like, the head guys at 7-Eleven. You know, hey, man, you know, we love your Slurpees. How about funding our online poker guys? I mean, how do you even start that conversation?
Well, I think the 7-Eleven is easier to understand because they're, like, everywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Family Dollar, I think, is a little funnier because, I mean, 7-Eleven, you're out, hey, I'm getting gas. Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't have any money in my online account. I'll go in and make a deposit. That makes sense to me, you know, when I'm getting my 2-for-1 hot dogs in a family-sized Skittles bag. But Family Dollar, you don't just randomly show up at Family Dollar, right? I mean, you have to make an effort to, hey, you know what? Get up in the morning and go, I'm going to Family Dollar today.
You're like,
and you get there, I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm getting the 2-for-1 deodorant, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right, I want to play Sit and Go tonight.
That's right. You're like, can I have the pizza cutter, the glass grapes decoration, the deck of cards with pumpkins on it? Oh, and then fund my account. I got to play that multi-table tonight. What the hell is that? But I mean, it's great. I mean, it's great. I'm not knocking it. That's what I mean by positive. I think it's fantastic. But it's just funny the two choices they made.
It's possible these have a shared ownership. I don't really know that. So
yeah, that's true too.
That could be too. But you know, hey, jokes all aside, I mean, it's making it easier to fund it. So You know, because again, go back back in the pre-Black Friday days when we all had NetTeller and stuff, where it was like, bing, 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 boom, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite that easy these days, and I mean, it's not that difficult either. But you know, the more options to be able to do it, great.
Right, so. And that's the key there. These are additional options.
Right.
You could do all the other ways you want, but a lot of people don't like to put it on like credit cards, or they don't want people knowing their they don't want to attach their bank account. You know, some people like the idea of, you know what, I might have a problem, so if I go bust, I'm not going to get in my car and drive to Family Dollar. You know, they're funded again. So it gives you sort of a defense mechanism there, too. So I like it. I like the idea. It just, when I saw those two stories, I'm like, that's hilarious to me. But I'm being positive. I'm not being negative. I just think it's great. And South Point's, you know, one of the leaders, obviously, in this idea. So I'm sure we'll see this everywhere pretty soon.
Yeah, I would think so. Absolutely. Well, something I don't think we're going to see everywhere, but Turdzilla wants to know.
Turdzilla.
You know, Turdzilla's back, right?
Yeah.
And he wants to know why no one offers duplicate poker tournaments like duplicate bridge. And he says they could do it online or at Poker Pro tables. Use 10 tables with identical cards dealt by position. Change the cards for the next round. After 10 rounds, award points to each position for the ranked chip totals by round. Total points after 10 rounds, and you're the winner. He says you can have inferior cards, but beat everyone at that position to receive maximum points for that round. He says duplicate play appears to exhibit more skill than a typical run-good finalist. What do you think?
Well, you know, I really don't. I agree with you right off the bat when you said this isn't going to pop up everywhere. And I just don't know why we need it. I mean, I guess maybe there's more skill, but there's skill in poker already. I mean, there are some people who can run good, and every once in a while, somebody who doesn't deserve to be there will be there. But that's okay, because that'll encourage them to come back, and then you'll play with them again, and you'll take their money later. I mean, I just don't see it seems like a lot of trouble for
I think that's the big thing.
I mean, I realize some of it's
a lot of work.
If it's electronic, it's not that big of a deal, because
right.
You just write the program once
and
it's done.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah, and that's what he's saying. But I recall a little while ago, a few years ago, what some big-time poker writer, was it Lee Jones or somebody like that, was involved with Duplicate Poker League or something.
Well, there was an online site called Duplicate Poker, I think. Actually.
Is that what it was? I know.
It was exactly what Turdzilla was talking about.
Okay.
So I was going to be sure we mentioned that. Obviously, it's not in business now, so obviously either the idea didn't catch on or the company was failed. I don't know which, but I got to think it's probably more the idea. Not that I'm criticizing the idea. I actually like it. I like the idea of what he's talking about is that, you know, this is a way to show judges around the country that poker's a game of skill, right? To give everybody the same cards and then show how one person can make more money than the other one or more chips. So I like the idea in general. It's the setting it up that I mean, in a live tournament, you can never do it. Or live room, you can never do it. Actually, you probably legally couldn't do it because to be able to do this, you'd have to manipulate the deck, right?
Yes, exactly.
And I don't think there's any gaming commission. I'd love to see that meeting. You know, yeah, hi, Mr. Gaming Regulator. We want to do this new thing where we actually decide what the cards are before we deal them out. Oh, yeah, sure. Stamp approval. Go for it. So, you know, it's never going to get past that, I think. And even if it did, though, I mean, it would be a lot of work to set the decks
up. Imagine setting those decks up.
That would be in your dead spread table. You know, the dealer there. And, hey, well, you're doing nothing. I'm setting all these decks up exactly the same for the next 10 rounds. Thank you.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I mean, live, it would never take off. Obviously, online, I mean, somebody tried it, and the Poker Pro tables, you probably could. But, again, the Poker Pro tables, again, you get into the whole gaming regulatory issue,
yes.
too. So, really, I think we're talking online. And then you go back to the duplicatepoker.com or whatever it was called and why that failed. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's just it's probably not worth the effort. I don't think, you know. And I also think it's probably one of these things where we know how irrational poker players are, right? You know,
right.
Anytime you talk about the card destiny.
Destiny, right? Yeah. Exactly. I knew you were going with that right away.
So if you set this up and did it exactly right, you know there's going to be people that say, hey, I don't, there's something fishy about this.
Yeah.
There's no way that guy got the same cards I got and got $10,000 and I'm broke.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, so I think you get the backlash there and trying to explain to people why they're just bad at poker. That never works, right?
No. And you know what, too? I'm glad it wouldn't be live, because I would feel tremendous pressure to do better than the person sitting in the three seat at the other table when I'm in the three seat at this table.
Right.
You know what I mean? Look at that guy's got a huge stack and I got nothing. I look like an idiot. And if that person's a true idiot, and everybody knows that person is a true idiot, and I got no chips and he's got them all, how much of an idiot am I going to look like? You know? I mean, it's just terrible.
I mean, really, unless your name is O'Malley or a hand of the week submitter, I mean, no one really knows when you screw up a hand.
Right.
You know, in that kind of tournament, everybody's going to look around at the end and go, boy, you must really suck. It's not like, oh, hey, I just got bad. I wasn't getting cards today. Well, no, you got the same cards that everybody else did. You just suck.
Well, you know, I hear that all the time anyway without duplicate poker, so I don't have to worry about this, because this would just make me want to open a vein and kill myself, I think.
You know, I guess the other weakness here, too, is, and you can't get around this, is that you don't know the skill level of the people around you, right?
Right.
So let's imagine a scenario where I'm in seat four at my table, and the other nine players are all World Series poker main event champions, right?
Right.
And you're at seat four at your table with a bunch of people we just dragged off the street, right?
Okay. Yep.
It doesn't matter how well I play at that point, right? I'm at a disadvantage, I think, correct?
Correct.
So, you know, the skill that he's talking about there is how you maximize your cards, regardless of what they are, but it still doesn't take into the fact that you've got different skill levels of the people around you.
Around you, exactly. That's exactly right, and that's what makes this so unappealing to me, on top of everything else. It's just like, I don't need that additional pressure, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. But I mean, I just, on top of everything else, the game's hard enough as it is. And, you know, I like to know that I can walk out of the poker room and just and convince myself that I played better than I actually did and not have someone else put it down in black and white and go, no, look, you sucked. Because look at this. You know, you just didn't play as well as this person did. And it's just, I don't know. But you're right. The people around you also, you know, if you're sitting down with a bunch of Doyle Brunsons versus a bunch of people who've never played before, you know what I mean? It's just not. I don't think it. I mean, there is skill, but I think there's skill in any poker, so why even have this, you know?
Now, I would say this is an idea that would bring me back to TV poker. If you did an invitational where you put, you know, let's use my example of world main event champions, but you brought two tables worth of it and had people had a rank amateur playing against the same, essentially the same quality of player, right?
Right.
And see how they do. That would be pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I think that it'd be fun to do like a split screen. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then it's like, all right, it's on Doyle Brunson. He's got Ace King. Let's see how he handles it.
Fascinating, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then, look at Jamie Gold decided to just call there with Ace King, and let's see who took the right tact or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then he, but again, you're right, though. I mean, ultimately, it would be, all right, well, since he just called, that means he got five people to call. And since he raised, you know, he only called because he knew that guy back there was going to raise. But at Doyle's table, there is no guy behind him that would normally raise here. So, I mean, it's still skill, but it's just there's reasons why they're playing him differently. You would still, you know what you would do? You'd end up looking at him, and if you weren't totally educated in poker, you'd be like, oh, that guy's an idiot. He played it wrong. But we still don't know what he's doing in his head. We don't know what he's thinking about these other players. And ultimately, you still can't. It's still not apples to apples. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. But it would be fascinating to watch and split the screen like that and say, here's their result. And that'd be kind of cool.
Something else that's fascinating is Indigo Sky Casino in Wyandotte, Oklahoma.
I'm impressed that you even pronounced that city name. I
look at that transition.
I didn't know what to say when I saw that. I'm so glad you read it.
A couple of our Andy Up updates for this week. Indigo Sky, actually a beautiful place. I visited there on my last trip up to Oklahoma. They are starting an Andy Up Poker League. Actually, they started it October 1st. It's going to run through December 31st. Players that can earn points for entering or re-entering select tournaments and making the final tables of them, and also for cash gameplay. And the top nine players each month will be invited to free rolls, and the top nine players at the end of 3 months will be invited to a final free roll that will award an Andy Up Poker Cruise package, cash, and a league champion's jacket to the champion. And then also remember, starting October 3rd and running through the 12th, Sarasota Kennel Club in Florida is running its Fall Poker Classic. And the top five finishers in the $440 buy-in multi-plate main event will win an Antiope Poker Cruise as well. And more info on that is at antiopecruises.com.
I thought you said multi-plate. I'm thinking, what? Is like there like a buffet going on during the tournament?
That'd be awesome if they had it was a slash poker tournament cherry pot eating contest.
A multi-plate. Oh, you're killing me. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344. Or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something pretty cool. This comes from Adam B. He says, if I were to buy into a limit game, how much do I plunk down? Does it go by the number of big blinds or number of big bets? I know you need proportionally less than a no limit, but I just don't know exactly how much is a standard buy-in. The casinos in Connecticut typically run 2-4 and 4-8 limit games. I can attest to that. So those are that's basically the buy-in that he's looking for. He wants to know the buy-in for those. And I know you're the limit guy between the two of us, but I play a lot of limit now when I have an opportunity. So to me, it doesn't matter. To me, it makes absolutely no difference. When we would play, like when we were at Vegas and we'd go maybe the Orleans or something, I would still sit down with like $100. Because as you're seeing your stack dwindle down, it makes no difference. You only need the maximum amount of bets for that one hand.
Right.
And then you can just add to it when the hand's over anyway. So I never really think about that ever.
No, yeah, I think that's an excellent point, is that in no limit, then you need to really consider how much you're buying in, because that's your weapon to the table. You know,
right.
You can go all in at any point. And limit, particularly 4-8, I mean, you're never betting more than $8 at a time. Obviously, you can be raised and re-raised and that. So as long as you have enough to get through that hand, it really doesn't matter. I guess there's some psychological thing to the fact that you have a big stack in front of you, maybe, and people don't want to, you know, try to bluff you off a hand if they see you have a big stack, even though you can only put the same amount in that they did.
Right.
So I guess that might be it. I think more to me, it's I worry more about what the people around me, because, you know, I travel a lot, right? So it's kind of different what people buy in at different casinos around the country. So for 4-8, normally I'm going to buy in for 200, just because, you know, that seems like what works for me, and I don't have to worry about going even out of my pocket,
right?
Usually ever, or at least for a couple hours, right? And but there's sometimes I'll get 200. They're like, oh, do you want to stack a red with that with a white? And I'm like, oh, and I look around and everybody else is playing with less than 100 in front of them, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, just give me 100, take that 100 back. But it has nothing to do with the game. That just has something to do with the, you know, the reaction to you buying in for more than you should. I will say, though, my advice to players is avoid buying for the minimum of these games. I think the minimum in limit games is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's normally $10, the small blind, so for a 2-4, it's $20. I mean, $20 isn't even enough to get you through a hand.
No.
If you get a good hand. And then you're constantly rebuying, you're slowing down the game, and, you know, just buy in for, you know, if you're going to come to the casino with $100, put $100 down a limit. It's not like no limit where you're going to lose it in one hand. It just speeds up the game.
So. Yeah, think about it. I mean, if fourth and fifth street, it's four bets max, and you're playing 4-8, that's $64. And then if it's, you know, pre-flop, you get it max somehow, you're looking at, 16? And then 16 again, so 32. So really, $100 should get you through. And that's if it's a maxed every single possibility.
Yeah, which almost never happens.
Right. Which almost never, ever happens. So $100 is plenty for a 4-8. If you want to do 150 or 200, then you're totally golden, because, you know, if you somehow slips your mind that you got into a big pot that maxed out, and then you still have 100 for the next hand. You know what I mean? If you forgot to rebuy between
hands
or something. So.
You know, what I normally do, I like rooms where $100 bills play.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then what I usually do is I buy a rack and I put a $100 bill underneath it. So that way, you know, I don't have a mound of chips in front of me, which is unnecessary, or red chips, which drive people crazy in limit games.
Yeah.
And then if I do get into a big hand and I haven't really thought about it, you know, once I get down to the end of my stack, hey, I've got Ben's.
Hey, there's 100, yeah, that's right.
And then I'm good to go. So that's what I normally do. In a 4-8, I usually get a rack of white and a $100 bill if they let me.
Yeah. I mean, there are the guys where you sit down on a limit game and then there's a guy who comes over and he buys in for 500 and you're playing 2-4. And you're like, you know right away that this guy has no idea what he's doing. I mean,
yeah,
any
I remember a story back when, I remember here in Florida when we used the $2 bet max, right?
Yeah.
One of the dealers told me that some guy came in and wanted to buy in for $1,000, and of course they let him because there's no maximum, right? So they actually had to get the security guards to bring out suitcases of chips because, you know, they didn't have any bigger than a $2 chip because that's all you could bet, right? So imagine they had to bring in $1,000 and $2 chips, so 500 chips to put on the table, which, you know, I mean, you could be the worst player in the world and you're not going to go through $1,000 in a straight $2 game the entire time the casino's open.
I used to see, at least now I'm starting to feel old because I remember, you know what I mean? It's like now you look back and you think, wow, I remember the two straight games that we played at Derby Lane and stuff. And, you know, I mean, and then before that, there were 25-cent, 50-cent games. And, man, just starting to feel old now. I mean, I feel like I've been around poker long enough now that I can reminisce. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and it's crazy. As I wrote the, you know, a cover story for this, or issue that just shipped, and I was reminded writing that about playing for quarters at the Seminole Casino here.
Yeah. Yep.
When I first moved here 14 years ago, now we're mocking people being able to go to Family Dollar and put money on their online account. You know, that's how much things have changed in 14 years.
It's crazy. All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com and we'll have AnnieUp Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of AnnieUp. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. This comes from Philip in Cerritos, California. Did I get that right, you think?
It's better than I could do.
All right.
Whether it's right or not, you get a gold star from me.
He says, when I was still a new player, I was eating my dinner with one hand and playing with the other in a 1-2 no limit hold'em cash game in a California card room. After five players limped, I tried to go all in, but I had my mouth full and couldn't speak. With one hand, I stacked as many chips as I could and pushed the stack of 28 $1 chips up to the line without crossing it. I then reached back and threw my remaining four $1 chips across the line. The dealer declared my bet a $4 call and pushed the 28 remaining chips back to me. Was it too late to call the floor at this point? What would the ruling have been if I had called the floor as soon as the ruling was made? Additionally, players at the table told me the line isn't really a betting line in that card room.
First of all, I want to congratulate Philip for correctly remembering he got 28 chips.
That's not easy to do.
In his stack. We get people that sent hand the weekend and they can't even remember the suits of the cards. And this guy knows 28 specific chips that he pushed, right? All right, here's what Sam says. By the way, shout out to our good friend Sam. He's just been hired as the director of poker at Golden Nugget in Las Vegas.
Yeah, so baby.
Look for him there in a couple weeks, folks. The first thing I would like to say about this scenario is that the sense of urgency on your part was not needed. You could have finished chewing your food before you decided to make any declaration. But that being said, I would have definitely asked for the floor. They would at the very least give you a proper explanation of the perimeter line rule. Every house has its own rules, so I will not give my opinion on this just because I'm not familiar with their rules. I would just like to emphasize that this is perfectly fine for you not to rush yourself and make a questionable bet when you can verbalize what your intent is, even if it takes you 20 seconds to swallow your food.
And that's a cool ruling, I mean, or at least a response from Sam, and we actually use that in this issue as well for our magazine, our October issue. But the thing that I want to pontificate on here, if you will.
Pontificating.
Yeah. Is I believe that this guy made a, the dealer made a poor declaration. If I don't care where the betting line is, he made a forward motion with chips, regardless of where the line was.
Right. Yeah.
And he made a clear motion where he didn't like put it to the side. He didn't cut him out. He stacked him as high as he could and he slid him forward and let him go. That's his bet. Now, maybe the extra four had to stay back, but not reversed. Something is clearly wrong there, and right. Whether he couldn't say anything or whether he was, you know, having a heart attack and falling on the floor, he pushed those chips forward and let them go, you know. And even if that betting line isn't the betting line, if it's not the betting line, all the more reason why that's a bet then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he pushed forward with chips and let them go. So that confused me, and I know Sam doesn't like to step on anybody's toes or whatever, but we don't know the card room here anyway, so it makes no difference. But, you know, the fact that he went forward and the dealer made that ruling and didn't even think about calling the floor when it's clearly controversial, That there's a lot of mistakes there.
Yeah, I think the one thing I definitely want to emphasize every time we get a letter like this to folks is that line on that table in almost every room is decorative.
Right.
And we're still getting emails about this, about people folding over the line. You know, that doesn't exist anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no folding line on a table. No. And that bedding line is really often not a bedding line. So what I do when I travel, if I get to a room and I see a line on the table, one of the first things I ask the dealer, I'm like, hey, is this a, you know, an enforceable line or is this a decorative line? So we should know. Because I think a lot of times people are making decisions assuming they know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours into their session, somebody does something and they find out that doesn't exist, right? So I would definitely do that. The other thing I like to say, too, is we get this all the time with Combs Floor. Should I have called the floor? There's no penalty for calling the floor.
That's right.
I mean, I guess the ruling can go against you, so I guess that's it. But, you know, it doesn't cost anybody anything. I mean, obviously, it can annoy your table mates if you're slowing down a game to have a floor come over and ask. But if you're unclear about anything, call for the floor. I mean, the worst that can happen is you're embarrassed because the floor comes over and essentially tells you you're an idiot, you know? But that doesn't cost anything, so right. never question whether you should call the floor. Just call the floor and find out what the answer is. That doesn't mean that the answer is going to be the proper one or the one that you hope for. But I definitely don't think that people should be sitting around wondering ever whether they should call the floor.
Exactly, because if you don't call the floor, you'll never get a chance to get your side told and to have it reversed in your favor, because the only reason you ever call a floor is because you disagree with something that's happened to you. So the whole point of calling the floor is to plead your case and say, hey, look, this is not right, and here's why. What I'd like to know then, if they said that wasn't a bet, I would like them for them to tell me what they think constitutes a bet.
Exactly.
Then. Because
yeah,
when I push those chips forward and then pull my hand back, you're telling me that's not a bet, but taking four chips and throwing them forward is? Well, how is that not a bet then? You know, so I would like to have all of that explained to me when I'm in that room. There's just no way that's not a bet in my mind.
Yeah. And then I will agree with Sam. I mean, take the 20 seconds to chew your food and verbalize. Because, I mean, again, it always goes back to verbalizing.
Yep.
You would have said all in, then we wouldn't even have this letter. We wouldn't have spent the last 10 minutes talking about it. And I understand why he didn't, because he was trying to speed the game up. And when he went while well, he was, you know, getting his low mane down his throat. but yeah, you know, again, if you verbalize it, then the risk of problems happening is minimized. So, you know.
Interesting side note, low mane. When you say low main, like if you go to another country or something, they have no idea what you're talking about when you talk to the Chinese food places.
Really?
No idea. Like I was in Italy and they spoke Italian there and they spoke Chinese, but they give you the menu and there's nothing on the menu for low main. And my wife really likes chicken low main. So when the waitress or server or whatever came over, I was like, you know, and I said it in Italian as best I could, but I don't know how to say low main, you know. So I'm like, do you speak English? She's like, yeah. I said, okay, do you guys have any low main? And she's like, what's that? And I'm like, what's low main? Everybody knows low main. She's like, no. And so it turns out I think low main is just an Americanized version.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably you go to China and they probably don't know what low main is.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. So they don't even know what low main is. So
nor
really,
do they know what General Zhao's chicken
exactly,
is.
Exactly. But it's so interesting that everywhere in America where there's Asian food, they know what lo mein is. Like, they've all told each other, or it's all been picked up along the way. But in other countries, they have no idea what lo mein is. So, you know, if you're going to, like, go to France and order lo mein, it's not happening.
See, just, folks, this is why you listen to the Antioch PokerCast.
That's right. We're worldly.
Poker information, and you get culinary advice.
We are worldly. Globetrotters.
Kind of reminds me of when my wife is home listening to the show. She gets off. She's like, who listens to this crap?
I know.
You guys just spent 20 minutes talking about your cats.
That's why the show should be an hour. Hey, guess what? We got a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's hit it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 2-5 No Limit Hold'em home game. It's a pretty friendly game, but the players can be tricky. They love to value bet and float when the opportunity arises. Oftentimes, they really have nothing to go on when they do float, other than a prayer, that is. The blinds post, the under-the-gun limps, and it's folded to us in the MP with the Queen of Spades, Queen of Diamonds. The standard raise here is 3x, but we account for the limper and make it $20 to go. It's folded back around to the under-the-gun who calls. This player is one of these tricky ones that likes to float. He's got a good grasp on the game and plays the players well, sensing weakness and pouncing. He also has a strength in his bet sizing. He can put in the right amount to make you think twice about what his intentions are. He's got us covered by 100, 650 to 550. We go to a flop of the 9 of diamonds, 4 of hearts, tray of diamonds. The under the gun checks, and since this board isn't all that scary, we fire. There's $45 in the pot, and we make a $30 bet. Our opponent thinks briefly and calls. With about $100 in the pot, the turn is the ace of diamonds. This card isn't great, but once again, our opponent checks. Now, I might get crucified for this, but at this point, I'm more interested in pot control and calling a reasonable bet on the river than trying to gain information. We check. The river is the four of diamonds. But this time our opponent leads out for a quarter of the pot, $25. So, we've got a paired board with four diamonds and the second nut flush. Fold? Call? Or are we raising here?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And I'm excited about this one. Our old friend Michael Cantor, frequent contributor, he's got three situations all involving Ace-King, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not Hand of the Week, it's situations.
Three situations. We're going to read each situation and talk about it, and then hopefully we can pontificate on them.
Oh, I like that.
Grow off of each one and make it an organic Hand of the Week.
I like that a lot. That's cool. Is this going to be like? So I don't have to write it down because it's a situation. That's my
situation,
favorite part.
Right? Yeah. You can just phone this one in.
All right. Very cool. I like that.
All right. So these all came from his annual Vegas trip, and he said it was at the final table of the Mirage Saturday afternoon tournament. Eight players left. It pays five. Blinds were 10,000, 20,000, and I had about 140,000 in my stack. I'm in the middle of the pack in terms of stack size. Early position calls. Our early position player about the same stack as me raises to 60K. I have ace king, so I raise all in. He calls with ace jack. In my luck, a queen high straight hits the board, and I'm down to 20K. Was going all in the right move at this time? I didn't think just calling was right because he could have had a pair, and I could have been going for my tournament life on a coin flip. Needless to say, three hands later, I got king king, went all in, and the other two called me. I had ace ace and ace queen, and the final board had both an ace and a king.
Holy cow. All right, hang on. Right. So you read that pretty fast, man. It's not like I have this in front of me. So
10K, 20K, bonds. Right. We have 140K.
Okay.
Middle of the pack in terms of stack size. All right. Early position player raises to 60K. We have ace-king. Go.
Okay, so I don't dislike the all-in. I mean, I can understand maybe a call, but I don't dislike the all-in because I only have 140K. If I'm going to re-raise, it's 180 or so anyway. So, yeah, I don't dislike the all-in. The thing I was confused about, too, you said a queen high straight hits the board. That means we would have the best hand.
Maybe he meant the...
He made a queen high straight with his ace jack, is
what
he means?
Probably the jack, yes.
Oh, okay.
So we were missing the jack.
All right, so then we're down to 20K, which is one blind. So that sucks. But I mean, you could just call and then maybe do the stop-and-go thing. But I think he's in position against this guy, right? Yeah, he was over. So you can't even do the stop and go unless you just call and then he checks to you on the flop. Then you could take it away and then do the stop and go. But you're short stacked. You gotta, you know what I mean? Not short stacked, but you only had seven big blinds. So I don't dislike that at all. I'm getting in with ace king pretty much every time there.
Yeah, that's a very good point about the blinds and where we are. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're right, you can't make any other legitimate raise without going all in. So it's either call or show. And really, the other guy made, I wouldn't say a bad decision there, because it sounds like everybody's short stacked here, calling off the ace jack. But I think if I had the ace jack, that I would have folded, to be honest.
Yeah, and it, what's the gap?
The guy to make a bad, you get, got the guy to make a bad decision, and he just got lucky.
You got unlucky. And the gap rule is you wouldn't call or raise with a hand unless it's, you know what I mean, bigger than what I would raise with in that position. Well, I would raise with ace-king in that position that that guy raised with ace-jack with, so I'm clearly raising there. You know, and a call is kind of useless because it's basically half your stack. You're calling off half your stack with ace-king. You might as well get it all in. And if you did a min-raise to 120, you can't. You only have 20 behind. He's not going to fold after the flop. You can't push him off the hand. So you have to just shove there. That's a good move. I don't think you could do anything differently there, really.
All right, situation two. I had just sat down at a cash table and bought in for $200. I have ace-queen, and I am in late position. There's an early raise to $10, one caller, and I just call. The board is ace-six-ace. The original raiser bets $40, gets called, and I can go all in. The original raiser waits a while, decides to call me with 8-8. Caller calls with ace-king and wins the pot with a king on the river to top it off. Was there any way not to go broke on that hand?
Well, Doyle Brunson's first rule is don't go broke with a queen in your hand. because that's the tiebreaker, and that's old school poker there. That's the, you know, ace queen now, people don't treat it the way they used to, but it, you got to really know your players. And if somebody early on is raising, you know, I think the early raiser though was 8-8. I'm not positive. That's hard for me because you're just reading it off to me. But if the ace king guy was the original, no, you said the original raiser had 8-8, right?
All we know is their early raise, so I don't know who raised and who called. But,
okay, but yeah, I mean...
The salient points are is... Oh, yeah, I guess he says the original raiser bet 40. Got called, and then it's on us.
Okay, yeah. I don't think that... yeah, that's tough. I think you're going to go broke there, but, you know, if you have an early position raiser and then a caller, your ace-queen could be folded easily there, I think.
Yeah, I think it's different if we were calling off our stack here. But yeah, the fact that we went all in and got, you know, called by ace king is a very different story. You know, with, you know, you got to think you're probably good there. You know.
Yeah, I'm talking about preflop though. I can get rid of that when I see a early guy raising to 10, another guy calling. I might be able to fold that ace queen.
Yeah, to be honest, that's one of the leaks I'm fixing my game. If I'm not the first, if I'm not the aggressor of the ace queen, I'm out.
Yeah.
Just because you get into the situations where you hit and you think you're good, and you know, it's just not as strong a hand as people think it is.
No, and that's, you know, and unless you absolutely know the players and you know they're raising with jack 10, you know, and anything, you know, that's something else. But when you're sitting on a cash game and he just sat down, so he doesn't know how these people play, so when you got a guy pretty much early in position raising and then another guy calling, is your ace queen really ahead at that point if you hit the queen or the ace? So it might be just smart to just see a couple more rounds, see how these guys play, and let that one go. You're going to get another hand in 5 seconds. So
sure.
But, yeah, after the flop, I'm not getting away from it.
All right, situation three. I had been playing for about 30 minutes at a 1-2 cash game and was up $100. I had bought in for $200. I'm in late position, and there are two limpers before me. I have ace-king and raised to $6. First limper calls, second limper, who has about 100 total stack, raises to 40. I again go all in. First limper folds, raiser instantly calls and says, do you have aces? He has ace-ace, and I lose $100. He had a small stack, otherwise I wouldn't have gone all in, but did I miss the obvious limp re-raise extremely strong hand? I'm playing with him for a while longer, and he only played three hands and turned out to be one of the tightest players I'd seen that weekend.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that I kind of disagree with here. I never go all in with ace king in a cash game pre-flop. I don't care how small his stack wasn't that small. You lost 100. I mean, that's your entire profit on ace king.
Right. Yeah.
I never do that. Two, the raise now obviously it wouldn't have mattered because the guy had ace ace. But if we're talking about playing regular poker and playing the raise to $6 in a 1-2 game with two limpers on top of it is not going to do anything for you.
Yeah, that's 15 easily.
Easily. I mean, it's almost 15 without anybody limping.
Right.
So that to me is kind of a situation that you need to avoid. It just so happens this guy had ace ace and re-raised you, and you were happy to see that re-raise with the ace king. But to go all in for, I don't want to flip $100 with ace king unless I'm, you know, Joe Millionaire and I got 10 buy-ins in my pocket and I don't care. But if I usually when I sit down, you know, I got like one or two bullets on me, I'm not going to waste 100 of it on ace king flipping with somebody who obviously, if he limped and then re-raised to 40, he's got something, you know, and probably something I'm have to be racing against. He's not doing it with ace-queen, so I'm clearly going to have to be racing with him against something, and in this case, you're screwed. You have to make a three kings or a straight that he can't make. So, yeah. To me, I would never think that guy is behind when he does that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he re-raised after limping. So, there's no way
I'm
that guy's
I'm just distracted by thinking about Chris Cosenza being on Joe Millionaire. Can you imagine that at the end? yes, I want you to be with me, and I'm not a millionaire.
That's
I'm
right.
just a poker publisher.
I'm just a poker publisher. I still have a wife who cuts coupons. We need to. Won't you join me in my... Never mind. So,
I get his point about the stack size. That's where he kind of got lost on this hand, right? Is, you know, hey, the guy's got 100, so... can't hurt me too bad. But again, you're racing at that point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At best, racing. At best, you're racing. At worst,
you might
dominate.
And not be disciplined as we are to be able to fold it.
I can't imagine a guy limping with ace queen and then re-raising to 40 with ace queen.
Yeah.
You know, because what he's hoping for is for someone to do exactly what we did so he can open up the betting again. And you don't want to do that with ace-queen. Nobody does that with ace-queen unless they don't believe you. And, I mean, he made it 40. So, I mean, he literally made it 7 times your bet.
Right.
You know, that's just crazy. So it's got to be telling you something there. There's no way he has ace-queen, ace-jack, ace-10 there. He just doesn't. Or king-queen or something. There's just no way. So now you've said, okay, I'm going to put $100 in. I just, for the last 30 minutes... brought my stack up to 100, got a $100 profit when I only bought in for 200, and I'm going to risk all of it now for the hell of it, because I maybe I'm racing with 2 unders, you know? And then even then, it's still a crapshoot, you know?
Well, yeah, this is one of those great examples of how cash and tournaments are different, right?
Yeah.
Because in a tournament environment, you probably need to make that move a couple times during the tournament. Because, you know, the blinds are going to go up and it's going to end at some point. Cash never ends, right? Cash only ends when you get up from the table and walk away.
Right.
So there's no reason to take these questionable moves in cash. You just sit there and wait for the right spots. I mean, I don't mean sit there and be tight, but I mean there's no urgency to take chances in cash like there is in the tournament.
That's right.
So here, you know, this guy raises a 40. All right, I got $6 in. Why am I going to... you know, risk 94 more on ace king. There's nothing I need to do from that. I mean, I will get a better situation later on where I can get this guy's money.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, you know, when they're chips and there's just not that many chips, that's one thing. But when it's, you know, when it's real money and you can take that, you've worked so hard for that $100 and it's really 33% of your stack now. It's just not worth it. You know, you gain nothing except possibly gaining that 100, but I mean, if you lose it, it's not like you're going to get more information on this guy. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a cash game. He can get up and leave after that, which he probably ended up doing. He probably hit and ran after that, and he left with your $100, and you're like, oh, great. You know, now I know this guy plays. He's gone. So, at least in tournaments, generally, he's going to be with you all day. But yeah, this is just, there's a lot of things in there that I would have done differently, especially the raise preflop. Now, it would have been interesting to see if he had made it, you know, 15 or 20, and then the guy re-raises to like 60. You know, do you go all in or do you just call? You know, because then it's only
true changes things
40 more, or if you made it 40 then it's just 20 more, you might just call. See, ace king, I know that you and Mark like to go back and forth on that little joke, but we bring it up often on the show, but it is just a speculative hand if you're not. You know, I mean, in this kind of situation, it's speculative. If you know you're behind, you can get away from it after a flop. You know, if you could just know that you have to an ace or a king to win this hand, and you don't flop the ace or the king, and then he goes all in, you can get away from it. And you saved yourself, in this case, $60 if he just called.
Yep.
You know, and then you moved on. And then maybe the guy will even show you his hand, and then you get that information for free anyway. So, I don't know. I love ace king. Because I can get away from it. That's what I love about it, is that I can get away from it. It's not that big of a deal. And then it's also a hand that gives you power in the late stages of tournaments and stuff, because you know that that's top pair, top kicker, no matter what, if you hit either one. And, you know, it emboldens you. So, I mean, I love that hand. But the best part about it is that you don't have to play it.
Right.
That's how I feel. I think you feel the same way, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like an insurance policy.
Yeah.
You don't ever want to make an insurance claim, right? Because something bad happened, but you like to have the fact that it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the same way with these hands, is that I like that it's strong in case there's a situation where I feel like I need to make a move and I've got that strength of the hand behind me rather than seven deuce. But I don't necessarily feel like I need to be on the offensive with it every single time.
And then I think you said that he was a type. You found out he was a type player, so I guess he stuck
around.
Yeah,
so he played only three hands for whatever length of time that he played.
So I guess he did stick it into a hit and run on him. But still, I mean, that's just to me. When somebody has 100 in front of him, I don't look at that 100 when I'm playing 1-2 and say, "Oh, that's not a that, I'm you know that's nothing." It's still 100. I mean, to me, that's when you bought in for 200, that's half your stack, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of those interesting things, too, because I'm usually short stacking cash because I don't want to put a lot of money on the table and no limit because I'm not confident in it. And you get that all the time when you make a move and some guy across the table like, what do you have in your stack? And then looks and goes, I fold.
Yeah.
And it's not because he didn't like his hand, he didn't like my raise or anything like that. He just decided that I didn't have enough money for him to take the chance that he was going to take.
Right.
And that's the same thing here. I mean, we took a chance with our ace-king, and there wasn't enough money there to make it worth it.
But, I mean, really, and I don't want to extend it any longer than I need to, but what is the point of going all in there? I mean, what's the point? Because you're ahead? No. Because
I think, again, this is the tournament bleeding in. I mean, this is one of my bigger problems in cash, is I end up playing, I can't separate my tournament strategy from my cash game strategy, and that's fatal.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know Michael as well as he does, but I'm going to guess that he made that decision based on how he plays in the tournament and not separating the fact that he's in a cash game and there was no urgency for him to put those chips in.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I think a lot of people do that. So, I mean, it's not necessary criticism of him, but.
Right, it's just that is a leak. Then, though, if you're not separating the two, it's clearly a leak. Like you said, it's fatal because if you're treating everything the same, you're never going to win at one or the other. You know, what I mean, one way or the other, you're going to lose. You got to make that adjustment. You know, cash you can always go into your pocket. There's no pressure. There's no blinds going up. There's no reason to treat it the same urgency as you would in a tournament, and vice versa. In a tournament, you need to have that urgency. If you think that you just sit around all day, you're going to get bled to death because the blinds are going to keep creeping up and taking away your money. And if you don't take any chances at all with flipping and knocking people out, the field's going to stay big. You need to knock people out. So, but in this case, there's just no reason to go all in here. There's just no reason to. Either, you know, if you want to re-raise because you believe this guy is some loosey-goosey player, that's one thing. But clearly you didn't know how he played because you found out later he was the tightest player that you'd seen all weekend. So if you didn't know what kind of player he was, always revert back to, what does it take to go limp, see a raise, and then make it seven times my raise? What hand does that?
Right.
And it's not a hand that's behind ace-king. There's just no way. So there's just no reason to go all in. Now, if you had just called and then ace came on the flop or king came on, you're gonna lose that extra 60. But if it didn't, if it came deuce-7-9, then the guy shoves on you. All right, well, hey, I took a chance. I had ace-king. I missed it, you know? And then you got $60 more in your pocket. That's a tournament buy-in. You know, for a daily or something. So, I don't know. But it's interesting. We never had somebody send in three hands like that. Or three situations or
situations,
whatever.
Yes.
He went through the ringer that weekend.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens if you go to Vegas, right?
Yeah, that's brutal. You got it's brutal. They'll chew you up and spit you out. I'm like, thanks for sending that hand in, or that situation. Appreciate it. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.